for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 353 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, it's the return of Jonathan Lewis, one of our favorite guests here and a prolific comics creator. He's got a Kickstarter going on right now. They've already met the goal of, as of my recording this intro, but they hadn't done that when we did our interview. But he's got lots of good stretch goals and things going on. It's for Kazuki and the Death Seekers. You don't always know when the end is coming, but she does, thanks to them. It's a great book, lots of good things going on. We also talk about his other project that he's been working on with other folks called Lobo, and it's not the DC version, I always got to point out. It's more of an action hero setting, and as always, a great comic with lots of good things going on. Many things to keep us interested in, and turning those pages really fast. Jonathan is always involved with those kinds of books, so it's always a pleasure to talk with him here at the podcast. We talk about what other things he has coming too, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show.
So many people are concerned with what others see in them or focus on what they see in others. I don't have that luxury because it's not what I see in others, but what I see around them. What I see is death. My name is Kazuki Okitsu. I've been seeing these figures for a while now, but I'm suddenly seeing more of them. They're covering the world. Together with just my best friends, a hero and a villain, I need to find out what's happening and then stop the end of the world.
It's always fun to talk with Jonathan Lewis, creator of many great indie comics. He works in video games and stuff like that, too. You got a couple of things going on, Jonathan. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Wayne. Great to be back on your podcast. Always awesome to be on one of the podcasts I've been listening to forever.
That still startles me. I'm always kind of surprised because I get... If other people listen to my podcast, they don't tell me. And so that's fine with me. I don't do it so people can tell me that. But I do it so people can listen, which gratefully you do. So I'm still really thankful for that. So that's great stuff. So what would you like to start with? I know you've got a book that you sent to me to look at that called Lobo that I really like. But you also got a Kickstarter going on. Do you want to start with the Kickstarter? Maybe that's what you'd like.
Oh, sure. Let's start with the Kickstarter.
Okay. Talk about the Kickstarter. What's it for?
It actually started out of a conversation I was having with my daughter about superpowers you wouldn't want to have. And out of my six-year-old daughter's mouth, because I wrote this about a year ago, she said, the ability to see into the future, but only if someone was about to die. Because it would be an awesome power, because you would know and be able to stop it, but it would be completely terrible because that's the only thing you could ever see.
Wow.
And I ended up building a whole character around it and had to build a concept of what that looked like. And that she actually sees these Grim Reaper-like characters show up around people.
Wow. And this, your daughter came up with this concept. That's amazing. She's been raised right, apparently.
A lot of comic books in her collection, yeah.
Oh, that's good. Okay, so, all right. So this, about a year ago, you started up with the concept, and you developed, I'm sure, the story and got the art team involved and stuff like that. So where does it stand right now? I mean, has the Kickstarter just gotten started as we're talking? Is the art done? I know you've got the script done, but is the art complete? What's going on?
Sketches are done. I believe the inks are done. Yes, inks are done. Colors are up to page 4. Lettering's actually all the way complete.
Wow, so that's good. This is pretty far along. Is this under your usual banner? What's the name of it?
SOV Comics.
Yeah, right. And that stands for?
Shades of Vengeance Comics. I'm sorry, I choked there.
That's okay. So that's good. So this is out there now on Kickstarter. If you go out there, what you have to look for, what?
Let's see. I want to be sure I pull up exactly the right thing. Kazumi and the Death Seekers.
All right, that's right. That's right.
And if you search for just Death Seekers, it'll pop.
Okay. So, okay, does this Is it intended to have an anime feel? Because that name feels anime to me, Kazumi. That sounds like an anime thing.
Another thing that actually came out of my daughter is a TV show called Martin Mystery from years and years ago. Same animation team that did Totally Spies, which you think a six-year-old girl would love, but she was more after the Martin Mystery. And every episode starts with the tale from the Black Lagoon's left restroom, or, you know, something silly like that.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Cool. And all of them have a real anime feel to it, so I tried to capture that with this.
That's interesting, because how do you get the show again? Where is it?
Martin Mystery. It was a Canadian show, I want to say about 20 years ago.
Oh.
It was on Netflix there for a little while, and my daughter binged it, and now I own a complete DVD collection of it just for her.
Interesting, because it's so fascinating to me. Today is a place where we're just so full of amazing stuff to catch our attention, and I'm always just fascinated by it all. You know, there are shows that I have seen from other countries that are actually quite good. You know, we sort of have a bias here in America and thinking that everything that we make are the best. But I've seen some really good shows. Of course, the thing that breaks that, of course, is Doctor Who, which does fabulously over here, even though it's a British show.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other ones, too. There are lots of great cartoons and comics and stuff like that that are coming out. I know, like for example, you have Captain Canuck up in the Canadian areas, and there's some other great books that I've read up there from Canada. And
yep.
So I'm always kind of fascinated by it. And so that's interesting that you went with an anime feel this time, because normally you haven't done that.
No, I do have another book coming out with a science fiction feel that it was giant robots, so I had to have an anime feel for it. but typically I don't do that, no.
It's interesting. So that'll be good. So this gives it a very different kind of a feel to it. So, okay, so this girl sees when someone's about to die, and she sees like spirits around them or something like that as she does it. So she's got a companion, if I remember reading the Kickstarter page. Well, who's the friend of hers that's like a superhero?
She actually has two friends that are superheroes. I wanted to give it a little more of a high school feel to it, you know, since anime.
Mm-hmm.
She has one friend that is a superhero, and so he has on a plague doctor's mask and everything. Because Kazuki refuses to wear a superhero outfit because people are dying all the time. She'd never be able to take her costume off.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what was the name of the show? Dead Like Us, I want to say, or Dead Like Me?
Yeah.
One of my favorite lines from one of the episodes was, "You would be amazed how many times you come this close to almost dying and then just miss it by a millimeter." And so she constantly sees everything, so she'd never have her costume off. So she just wears regular street clothes, whereas he wears a plague doctor's mask.
Mm-hmm.
And he never takes off the mask in the comic whatsoever, but he actually has a really bad acne and a really bad complexion, and he actually prefers being the superhero.
Hmm.
You know, because high school, so why not give the character that trait? And then she has another best friend who is a supervillain.
Hmm.
She shows up, let's see, page 5 of the comic. And she acts kind of like a moral compass for her whenever she starts feeling too down or too bad. This, you know, aspiring supervillainess just goes, "You have no idea what bad is. You know, shut up and stop being emo."
So how does this happen, though? I mean, you know, there's all these three people happen to be friends. I mean, that's different.
Yep.
Is it that they are basically, you know, it's just there's some circumstance around them that makes that happen? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, it's actually based around some of the friends that I had right when we actually started Shades of Vengeance of me and Ed and a friend that he had. We acted kind of as a balancing point for him because the other person always said no to everything that we wanted to do, and they were in charge of the finance side of the company, whereas I, you know, every idea that ran through my head I wanted to do, so I said yes to everything, and to have a balancing point between the two of us is what made the company happen.
Interesting, because it's so interesting to me, and I there's so many circumstances under which there are people who, you know, are in charge of the finances, and they're the ones that don't want to do the creative stuff. Because they're just not certain it's going to make money, And and I'm always kind of fascinated by that because I had a friend of mine that used to say, and he came up with the whole notion of Kickstarter long before there was a Kickstarter, that we should pay to make things happen individually. And if there was a TV show, he was thinking at that time Buffy had been canceled and he wanted to have Joss Whedon do more. And he thought the thing to do was that we'd all get together and somehow get money to Joss Whedon so he could do it. Of course, I said, a television episode costs like $1 million. I mean, I don't know how many of us have enough to make a dent in that. But it's just kind of interesting to me. But, all this stuff, this is, again, where Kickstarter is really helpful because it helps people like you make these projects, where before you probably couldn't have. People would say, oh, it's never going to sell. They don't have tights on and stuff like that. They probably have told you so. It's great that you get to do that now. All right, so you've got the script is written. Is this going to be like a miniseries, an ongoing? How are you going to handle this book?
This one's actually just going to be a very short one-off.
Okay.
Probably only 10 pages. That's all we have sketched and inked at the moment. Mm-hmm. It could go double length. I do leave it with a little bit of a cliffhanger so that it could be like the usual 21 to 23 pages that you see in most comics. But I didn't intentionally write it that way. I wanted it to be, the story was as long as it needed to be.
Mm-hmm. But shouldn't books be like that? I mean, I got my vein in thinking television right now, and with like Netflix and the Marvel stuff that's coming out, there are 13 episodes, whether they deserve to be or not, and I'm always kind of frustrated with that because I think a story, anthology books don't sell as well as they used to, and I used to love anthology books because you got the story as it could work or should work instead of this business where you're stretching things out to fill a comic, and stuff like that. So I'm glad to hear that you're doing that because you've done this in the past successfully too, I think. So
yep. Both the Penumbra books were written that way. I wrote them to be however long it made sense for the story to be, and then it just stops.
Mm-hmm. See, that's the way it should go. My humble opinion. I don't understand why it doesn't. Well, I do understand. It's the business. It's show business, and you've got to get what people expect, and what they expect are 22-page stories, and that's what you got to have. And so I'm kind of got now. The question is, as far as like you selling them and things like that, I'm trying to remember. Do you go to conventions and sell them? It's largely digital. How do you sell these issues?
Yes, yes, and yes.
Okay.
We go to conventions all the time and sell them directly. I go to several in the United States, but predominantly we're in England. Mm-hmm. I want to say last time you and I talked, I was headed to MCM in London, actually.
Mm-hmm. How was it?
Oh, I don't think we'd ever sold that much before. Mm-hmm. It was one of the first times the comics had its own booth separate from the games. Mm-hmm. And so it was just me and one other guy pitching comics at everybody that walked past. And I was surprised at the number of little girls that bought our comics.
Interesting. Well, of course, you have female characters, too.
Mm-hmm.
That has a lot to do with it, too, because the young girls, as I've seen them, are looking for stories. The book that I'm helping, too, has three female leads in it. And so we get a lot of female customers because one of the things we talk about, the fact that we have three strong female leads in our book. And I think that your book, like Penumbra is a girl. You've had other female characters in your books as well.
Yeah, I actually had one little girl walk up to my booth and didn't talk to me, didn't look at me, and was super shy. And then she looked at the Penumbra book, turned to her mom and goes, "Mom, she looks like me!" And I had to give her a copy.
Aw. See, that's, I hate to say it, but that's kind of what people are looking for. They're looking to characters they can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good that you're doing this. Okay, so the Kickstarter's going on. The story is like a one-shot, basically. So you said it's got a cliffhanger, though, ending. So just to keep the door open for good things to come in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good to see. Now, when is this going to be available?
Let's see. Whenever the colors get paid for. Okay.
So in other words, when the Kickstarter gets done, then the process becomes more viable.
Because that's actually the book was pretty well paid for. We were just short some money for the colorist, and that's the whole reason we had the Kickstarter instead of just releasing it on Comixology or whatever like we normally do. Because this was very much a passion project on my part. Ed was like, "Why are we doing a horror story? Why are we doing a Halloween story, John? Nobody wants one of those." I'm like, "No, we have to do that."
But this is the perfect time of the year for that. Of course, Halloween's coming.
Oh yeah.
And what you're going to have to do is, the trick's going to be, though, you've got to this is not going to end. Your Kickstarter ends. Tell me when it ends. It ends in early November, right?
Yep, November 3rd, 4th, the first Sunday of November.
First Sunday of November. Okay, I can look at my little calendar and count. November
4th.
Yep. Yeah. What time? Do you remember?
Let's see. 10 o'clock your time, 9 o'clock Central.
Central, okay. So it's, is that evening or morning?
Evening.
Evening, okay. It's good. Always good to do things in the evening rather than the morning.
Yep. I want to give everybody a chance to have dinner and then pull out their phones and go, oh, wait, I got to back this.
Or get their little notices and stuff like that. Watch us out. So how many Kickstarters does this make now?
Of just my stuff?
Yeah.
Let's see here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Wow.
I think.
So is that easier now? I mean, now that you've done it this many times, that you probably understand the process pretty well.
Yep.
That's better because, you know, people always tell me it's the daily heart attacks. And then the first one, when somebody does it and it's not successful, then they go, oh, my gosh, I don't know if I'm ever going to do that again. And then they go into it. So some people, there's one guy who keeps doing Kickstarters and they keep failing. And I keep telling him, Indiegogo, Indiegogo, because, you know, you don't have to meet your goal. All you have to do is whatever you get, you get. Mm-hmm. And that would be better for him than doing a Kickstarter, but I can't talk him into it for some reason. But anyway, we'll see what we can do about that. But this one, you have all of them been successful, or have you had some that didn't quite make it?
We had one that didn't quite make it. We ended up canceling it ahead of time. It was Violet. Mm-hmm. And then we turned around and like redid a bunch of stuff and came out, and it is by far our most successful. Hmm. It was nearly 800% funded.
Hmm. Isn't that interesting? Did you learn something that helped you when you did that?
Oh, yes. Let your audience know it's coming.
Communicate. That's always a big thing. So that's good. Well, that's really good because now you seem very relaxed about it. I mean, when I talk to people about Kickstarters around, they're usually all kind of nervous and, oh, my gosh, is this going to work? But you've done this so many times now. This is just like regular stuff.
It helps that it's 80% funded while you and I are talking. If we were at 20%, I'd be sweating it just a little bit more.
I contributed to it, too, as well.
I saw. Thank you so much.
Oh, no problem. It's always good to support quality. The thing I'm interested in, though, is you're and I don't know if you want to give the number out, but your goal's really low. There's some people have had like $1 goals, and that's not yours, but yours is not like, I've had people, the one guy that had canceled recently had like a $10,000 goal and he didn't make it. And so do you like lower goals or do you want the higher goals? Which one works best for you?
If you look at all my different Kickstarters, like the last one, the one I actually sent you the comic of, it was at 1,000, whereas the one before it was 500. I don't believe in lying to my audience. If I am this much short on making a comic, then that's all I ask for. Mm-hmm. I was only $100 short on getting this thing colored, so that's all I asked for.
Hmm. Okay. That's realistic. That's good. Of course, if you let people know that, too, they're usually more supportive of that kind of thing. So that's really good. So, okay, so the who's doing the art on this book, by the way?
He was an artist. I actually hired him around Halloween last year, and he did all of the pages but one of this comic way back when by the name of Kellick. Mm-hmm. And I went through a really bad sickness, and I wasn't keeping up on my emails with him, and he got upset with me. Mm-hmm. But then through the way of things, Ed actually hired him for a comic that he had written called Flora.
Okay.
Or is it fauna? Whichever one of those means animal.
Okay, that's flora's plant, so fauna would be animal.
Fauna. There you go. Mm-hmm. About a guy that can shapeshift into different animals, and was really impressed with his work, and came to me and goes, John, do you know this guy? And I go, yeah, he was the one that started that Halloween comic that fell through. And he goes, oh, well, let's hire him to finish it then. So he went ahead and finished it, and then Brian, who he was the colorist for Brian, I butcher his name every time I say it. Brian Arful Magne.
Okay.
Oh, that's not even close to right. I'm sorry. Brian, if you listen to this, I'm sorry. he did the colors for Lobo, the comic I sent you a copy of.
Right, which is really good. I really liked it, by the way. I thought that was a great book.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if. Okay, let's wrap up the talk about the Kickstarter. You've got until Sunday, November 4th, in the evening to get the totes together. You're pretty close, so it's not a heart attack every day that you look at it right now. So we're doing pretty good. And when that happens, I know you said it's going to take a while until the colorings get done. Do you have an idea as to when that book's going to be delivered, or is that kind of when they finish it?
If I have to send out a copy that doesn't have colors yet and then send an update out later, one way or another, everybody will have a readable comic by December.
Wow. Okay. So just in time for Christmas.
and I intend to release whatever's available. Like, I sent you a link of what's mm-hmm. currently available. Mm-hmm. One way or another, around Halloween time, you know, it might be All Hallows Eve. But everybody will get a copy of it pretty close to Halloween as well. So they can enjoy it while the spirit's still kind of there before the turkey starts coming.
Because it's to me, like Grant Morrison did a book called Klaus. It was about Santa Claus. And it was very updated. He's not fat. He's a great big warrior type guy going through. But it started before Christmas, but it ended in like April. And I remember thinking, I wonder how many people are actually still buying this book. Because, you know, not many people are interested in Christmas stuff in April. So I was like, well, you know, I hope that Mr. Morrison is a big name, taking up Green Lantern right now. Mm-hmm. But I'm always kind of like, well, I hope it works. But I'm never sure. This is why I always tell people, and I've said this on this podcast before, think about your release date and kind of plan for that if you can. You know, if you're doing a Christmas book, do it before Christmas instead of after. Your sales will be vastly better. Mm-hmm. If you're doing a Halloween book, unfortunately, yours will come out a little after, but, you know, if that's the best you can do, that's what you got to do. And, you know, horror stories, I have to say, and this kind of Halloween-y type stories, they're pretty common during the whole rest of the year, so I don't think that'll hurt it very much.
I think it'll do okay. And there's nothing necessarily overt. There's no pumpkins or anything.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that should go really well. All right. Let's move to the next book, which is Lobo, which is not the DC Lobo. This is your creation, your very own making, as far as I can tell. So talk about Lobo. Although I don't think you're writing this one. According to the credits, you're providing dialogue for the characters?
Yes, leftover from that was what my career was in comics years and years and years ago. Is all I was a dialogue expert. I was really good at making dialogue just flow. Mm-hmm. And then I also did the lettering on it because I think I do the lettering on all our comics.
Okay, so that's good. So, okay, what is the book Lobo about?
It is about a hero who has no superpowers.
Okay.
And you know, I always thought it's kind of a cop-out when you start looking at Marvel or DC about the characters that have no superpowers, Iron Man and Batman. Mm-hmm. Well, they do have a superpower. One's a mad scientist and can invent whatever he needs at any given moment. Mm-hmm. And the other one has the superpower checkbook that he just writes the check and has whatever gadget he needs. Mm-hmm. I wanted a character that was really, truly, he had no superpowers. And me and Ed sat down and hashed it out, and he came back to me with a story pitch for a character in South America that he might have body armor and stuff, but it was really nothing you couldn't just buy off the shelf. Mm-hmm. And he goes around and says, you know what, since drug dealers and other people are so horrible and terrible, I'm just going to be violent back at them and mm-hmm. see how well that works out for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And is this a one-shot too?
This one is currently just a one-shot. I definitely could see it going a second issue because the answer of who the villainous is mm-hmm. isn't quite answered. Mm-hmm. And I know Ed is just itching to write more about her and him.
Because you don't want to spoil it at this point, who the villainess is.
Well, I'm happy to go ahead and talk about her because she's such a big character in her own right. Of this is a villain who, she's not a villain because she wants to do evil or because she wants to hurt people. She's a villain for the reason that a lot of people find themselves doing bad things. Mm-hmm. She thought she was doing the right thing. She thought she was taking power away from corrupt people by taking it for herself, but at what point are you the bad person now?
Mm-hmm.
And she just doesn't see that it's her.
I think if I remember the name of the character right, it's Santa Muerte?
Like, yep.
Saint Death? Is from, that's what it is in Spanish. So, and sometimes she's got, in the book, she's got like a bone face on, and sometimes she doesn't. You know, she ends up talking to Lobo at one point. He kind of comes to her, and they have this interesting discussion about overcoming evil, like just like you're just talking about right now. Mm-hmm. They talk about what's the better way to end evil, and her recommendation is what she did, which apparently she became part of this organization. And but see, now she's, the lines are blurred for her. So I was kind of interested to see that they have this real interesting discussion, and they, of course, they don't come to any kind of agreement, or it would be a totally different book.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked the story. I thought it was very fast-paced, lots of action, and still lots of good character moments with it. You didn't have anything to do with the plot this time?
No, I did a bit of the timing and, of course, the dialogue. If you like the snappy dialogue, that was me. If you like the really great story, that was Ed.
Okay, very good. Very good, so good. And that is available now? How do we get a hold of this book?
You can hit us up through our website, and it should be up on Comixology before too awful long.
Okay, so that's good. Now talk about how long the book is. Is it what? It's not a 12-pager, is it?
Oh, it's longer than that.
Okay.
You got me on the spot, though. I've forgotten how long it actually is.
Okay, give me one second here. We're both opening up our acrobats here to see how long the thing is.
I'm showing 24 pages, wow. One of which is the cover.
Yes, great
so
cover,
it's a full
by the
23.
Way. That is a great cover.
Yes, I got to rant about this cover real briefly. This is Ben Vasquez, who works for Fireside Creations and Mark Harper Ministries. I ran into him at a convention in Omaha, and he and I just stood and talked about comics and being in part of the independent press. He and his brother are a team. His brother has done work for Aspen Comics and all kinds of stuff.
Hmm.
And I said, I love your brother, but after talking with him and looking through his art, I liked his stuff the best. I'm sorry, I had to pick favorites, guys. And I had to hire him for the cover for this.
Cool. So, because I really like it. It's apparently in the background, that's Santa Muerte back there. And then Lobo's at the front. And he's got this great shiny armor. It's silver, which is metal. You know, I never get Iron Man's yellow and red. Because most armor tends to be metallic looking or silverish or white or something like that.
Yep.
And I love that cover about that. It's very nice. It's got a great painted feel to it. It's really good stuff. And then we get into the story, which is really interesting. The guy Lobo is sitting there, and you know, very typically like Batman does every once in a while, he's bandaging himself up to try to get done. And then I guess a friend of his comes in and says, What happened? And then that's how he gives him a chance to explain what the story is.
Mm-hmm.
And all kinds of good things where he's taking on these people. And let's just say this is a very violent book. There's lots of action going on. He breaks one guy's knee, and then he's going around. He does the Batman's favorite thing, which is, and I don't want to compare it too much to Batman because it's not, but he holds this guy up by his ankles, you know, which is a Batman-esque thing to do.
Oh, yeah, definitely a reference.
And he, you know, all those kinds of things. Then we got to the villainess of the piece. And she's got very interesting stuff going on. She looks out for her folks, which is interesting because right away you get a sense that she's not necessarily terribly, she's not like solid black evil, you know, she's not completely evil. She does look out for her people, which makes her, you know, less, because they know the Joker, for example, in the very first Batman movie, where he, you know, the one guy makes a mistake and he takes the gun and shoots the guy for making a mistake. She's not going to do that. She's going to support her people. She says she gives them good health care, which is, you know, which immediately I said, this is not your typical villainess. This is something different. But she does wear different costumes at different time, and it's interesting to see the two. And then the two of them actually have to get into it at one point, and he kind of realizes that he may or may not win this battle. And she has something that's really interesting to me, is that she's got some kind of almost Dr. Octopus-like spider claw things that come out. What's the deal with that?
Her original name, like if you go to the Lobo Kickstarter, was the Empress of Bones.
Mm.
And her specific empowered ability is that she's able to pop bone appendages out of her body. She has bones like layering across her skin. You can't just punch her or hit her or stab her because she has bone armor, just subdermal. And it makes her nigh invulnerable.
Interesting, because she doesn't look all that bony, but the bones appear to come out of her back. And yep. They allow her to attack him from behind and everything like that, which he can't see, which is difficult to defend. And as we get towards the end, let's just say something happens that I was wondering if you were going to do. And I wonder if this is leading into what I always thought you were going to do at some point. Are you going to have a team book come spin out of this? How's this going to work?
Lobo is always going to be off on his own.
Okay.
It was one of the things that, to me at least, never quite made sense about Batman is why would Batman hang out with the Justice League? He's really only concerned with Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's actually going to be... I've written it. I'm not sure if it'll make it to the final comic book, but all the Empowered get together, Blue Shift and Violet and everybody else, and somebody makes a comment of, hey, shouldn't we invite that guy from South America? And Empowered in South America? Yeah, right. And they just completely blow him off.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He doesn't have superpowers, so right. Why would they?
Right. Well, in these kinds of battles... That's why I always thought Batman was, the old argument used to be that Batman didn't belong in the Justice League for that reason. But his ability is in his head,
in
my mind. So that's why I think that he completely does belong there, because he's a strategist. And now you notice, like, for example, in Scott Snyder's Justice League, you'll see Batman strategizing and he's communicating with everybody and stuff like that. He's kind of doing, that's the kind of thing he excels at. So I like that. Is Lobo that kind of character? I can't see him doing that, though, because he's much more of a physical get out there and take people on face-to-face stuff. So I don't know if he's going to be able to do that.
That's who he is in this first issue. Something I like to do with our comics, whether I'm writing them or not, I'm still the head of comics, so I'm still the comics director. There's actually a line said about Batman in, I think it's the Bruce Timm one where Supergirl shows up. They go to Apocalypse and, what's the big guy's name? Darkseid. And Batman has armed all these bombs and he says, you know what, either let go of Supergirl or I'm going to blow up this entire planet. Darkseid at first tests him and then lets him go, and he says to Batman, had the Kryptonian or the Amazon tried that gambit, I'd have killed them where they stood. But you're human. You kill your own kind. And to have that be the line that was said to that version of Batman, that's the Batman from Batman the Animated Series. I'm just really, really struck me, and it stuck with me, and that's kind of my vision of who Lobo eventually will be, is he's the guy that would take the chance that no one ever would, and people believe he would do it because of the type of hero he is.
Interesting. So, you said, who is Ed, by the way? I want to make sure we get his full name in there. Ed, what's his last name?
Ed Jowett. He's also the CEO of the company.
Okay, I want to make sure we get his name in there significantly. So do you guys, it sounds like you didn't have any input on the plot on this one, and yet as he goes forward, it sounds like you've got some good ideas as to where he's going to go. Did you and Ed kind of talk about the future of this character? Is that how this is working?
Well, I'd be lying if I said I had nothing to do with it. I mean, Ed did the production on this. He did the art direction. He was the one that talked to the artist. He and, I'm going to butcher their name, Leonor Macedillo, sat down and wrote the comic, because it was written in a place that neither I nor Ed had been, but they had. And, we wanted to make sure we had the feel right for it. And it's one of those things of, it's not that I have nothing to do with it, I'm not a predominant part of it.
Okay.
But equally, I always know where the story's going.
Okay. Well, you're sort of like the Stan Lee of this group. You kind of are watching over everything and seeing how all this stuff interacts.
I hope I fare half as good as that man did in life.
So, all right. As we stand now, of course, this book is going to be on Comixology. Did you have any other conventions you're going to go to that people, if they wanted to get paper copies, could do it?
Not anytime soon, because we're getting into the cold season, and I live in Nebraska.
Ooh, lucky you. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. This is why when I live in Florida, some days I'm grateful. Although I have to say it's funny that the boss that I work for part-time, she's every time I walk in the office, she's talking about how terrible and hot it is.
Oh, come on.
So hot. And I said, well, it's Florida. What did you expect?
Yeah, it's not going to be snowing outside. This isn't Ernest Saves Christmas.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I just was like, I always get a kick out of that. But anyway, I don't blame you for cutting back. A lot of the major conventions are over by now.
Yep. And I'm from Louisiana. I like it warm. Mm-hmm. I don't know who looks out the window and goes, white stuff. Yeah, we should live here.
But that's not the complete thing about it. You're there because for other reasons, your family, your job, other things like that. Those are the reasons why you're in those kinds of climates. But in another sense, it's good that you're stuck inside because it allows you more time to work on internal stuff like this.
Yep.
You get to do these things.
Most of my writing gets done in the wintertime.
Oh, really? Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So, okay, well, so it's going to be a while before you get to another convention. If people do want to get paper copies, can they get a hold of you?
Yep, and through the website, we are always selling them there and are happy to ship them to you.
Okay, and what's the website again?
ShadesOfVengeance.com, and then the comics is just a tab there.
Okay. Okay. And Jonathan, knowing you, you've got several irons in the fire. This is not all that you're working on. Is there anything you can talk about at the moment, or are those all kind of in the secret realms right now?
Yes, I have another one of my science fiction books coming out as soon as the Death Seekers is over with.
Okay.
And it's going to have to go to Kickstarter, too, because it's running a bit short. Because I went way overboard on the art and story on that one. It's going to be the full 23 pages, full page spread here and there. It's about the chess game that happens in war between who's the smartest in battle or often win. Doesn't matter how outmanned or how outgunned he is. Mm-hmm. But it brings up the question of, and it's something that I've run into a lot in my life, and having listened to more than a few of your podcasts, I think you've run into it as well, is sometimes the smartest man in the room is not the one in charge.
Right, right.
And what do you do if you could change an entire war that your side is losing, but the person in charge won't listen to you? How far will you go to save humanity?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, that's a very deep subject. That'll be interesting to see how that comes to be. Single issue, multiple issues. How are you going to handle that?
It's actually the sequel to Bug War 1 and 2. This is actually Bug War 3. Mm-hmm. Each issue has dealt with a different story style, a different storytelling, and different characters, with one main character running through all of them. Who I say main character. She's the instigator, not the living breath of each comic.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you got a female character, sounds like, that when you said she, that means it's a woman who's doing it. I always want to talk with you about the fact that I like the way you do women in your comics.
Thank you.
I think that they're varied. I'm sure I've told you the discussion I've had with some of my friends that a woman should be maternal and they should never, especially lead women, they should never ever be anything. I said, but you're really restricting what a woman can do when you do that. Men can be scoundrels and scientists and nerds and athletes and all this stuff, and yet you want a woman to only be maternal. I said, aren't you kind of limiting? Oh, no, that's the way it should be. And I'm like, well, I think you need to widen your scope on that. But see, your books always are great fun because I always get to see women in different roles. And not every woman is the same. It's not the same woman every time we see a character who's female. And so I always like the way you do that. And I wish other people would do that more. So that's kind of my take on that.
It's something I always enjoy. Like, we were actually just talking about Lobo and how it has a villainess as the main character. Mm-hmm. That actually comes off of something my dad said to me once is, you won't see equality when women can be heroes in movies. Mm-hmm. You'll see equality when women can be villains and nobody bats an eye.
See, that's the thing.
And I wanted there to be a female villain and to have her be more nuanced than, oh, look, a local drug lord, which is all you would need to do and you'd get away with it. And I didn't want that. I wanted her to be a bit more than that. And Ed really delivered on that.
It's really great. And I really loved the book. Okay, the book is Lobo, and it looks like the subtitle is Dauntless, is it?
Dauntless, yep.
So I want to make sure we get that in there. And you've also got your, say the name, because you probably do it better than I will, of the Kickstarter.
Kazumi? Yep, Kazumi and the Death Seekers.
Okay, so that's going on right now. It's going to end on Sunday, November 4th, and you want to get in there as soon as you can because, you'll probably have some stretch goals if you meet your goal. You're 80% there. You may come up with
99.
Oh, wow. Somebody left a whole dollar. Yep. That's as we're recording. Of course, by the time people get to see this, it'll be a little different. But I just want to let you know that you're ready to, right on the cusp of success as far as that goes. So that's really good, Jonathan. You know, much success in the future. I really always enjoy your books. And the chance I get there to read them, I get a chance to talk with you when something new comes out, too, which is always great fun. So keep up the wonderful stuff.
Oh, thank you, and thank you for having me. I know I say it every time, but I can't tell you what a dream come true it is to actually get to be on your podcast as a comic creator.
Well, it's no problem. It's great fun, and I sure appreciate your support as well as I try to support you, too.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne, as a man. I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this week. Please be back next time when I'll be speaking with another great comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.